They say, the harder the work, the greater the reward. This is our life's work.
Good morning. It is 9:08, Wednesday, February 9th. This is the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. And my money this Sunday is going to be on the Rams, but my heart is with the Bengals, because every time one of these loser franchises rises up and overcomes, there's hope yet for the Jets.
Good morning. Bill Finley, a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News. 6 days till pitchers and catchers. Oh, never mind. What a joke.
Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. And that's all I got for this morning. Let's get it on.
Nothing to follow up on with Bill's lamenting of baseball strike.
I got nothing. You guys filled the void.
That's where we are. We're void fillers, Jeff. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. The Keeneland Spring Meet runs April 8th through the 29th. New Keeneland Select accounts that wager $300 in the first 30 days earn $100 back. With their sign-up bonus, visit KeenelandSelect.com to sign up. So we had a pretty nice weekend of racing, mostly at Gulfstream and Santa Anita as the Derby Trail starts to warm up a little bit. We had the Grade 3 Holy Bull Stakes at Gulfstream with White Obario winning. He's the son of Race Day for Safi Joseph. Got a 97 buyer. I thought he ran well, but I thought he was a little bit lucky with some of the shorter odds horses behind him. Got in a little bit of trouble. I thought Mo Donegal actually ran a winning race. I thought that was, you know, the race kind of set up against him, and the Gulfstream configuration and the way the track plays also set up against him. I thought he ran really well, just to miss second in there. So we talked to Todd Pletcher yesterday about him, and I think he felt the same way. So he's not going to be deterred with that horse going forward. But the story of the weekend was it was really an unreal weekend for Bob Baffert at Santa Anita. He had three graded stakes wins, and it seemed like each one was more impressive than the other one. He had a Dare Manor in the loss for Hennes, who got a 94 buyer. Really beautiful striding filly by Uncle Mo. Just was absolutely dominant in that race. Always looked like a winner. Got a 94 buyer. You had in the Santa Monica, Marinese, who's a daughter of American Pharoah, got a 108 buyer. So that was a breakout performance for her. And then I think the one that everyone's going to focus on is Messier, who's the son of Empire Maker and the Bob Lewis on Sunday. He, I thought, ran the most impressive race out of all three because he was taking heat throughout and then just exploded away in the stretch anyway. Got a 103 buyer. He was, I thought, a little bit of a disappointment as a two-year-old. I know he won a grade one, but I thought that Del Mar Futurity kind of won that race by default because they were going so fast up front. It was a four-horse field. That was the thing that was disappointing, honestly, about the races at Santa Anita over the weekend, a bunch of four- and five-horse fields. But Baffert was the story, and his horses, like I said, were one was more impressive than the next. What do you guys think?
Yeah, you're right about all of that, Joe. Baffert was the story, and Messier was the story among the stories. If the Kentucky Derby were run next week, he would be the favorite in the Kentucky Derby. People are going to see a 15-length win and that 103 buyer, and people are going to jump all over that. Plenty of time for someone else to jump up. We're going to have to see what happens with this horse. But he was ultra impressive. And again, you know, it's the elephant in the room. What on earth are these owners going to do so far as getting the horse in the Kentucky Derby? I still have the opinion that Baffert is going to find a legal way to be able to run these horses in the Kentucky Derby. And I think he's telling his owners to just hang with me. We're going to get this done, which is why nobody that we know of has taken any horses away from him. But yeah, you know, it's a typical year for Baffert. He's got so many good horses out there. He's got New Grange coming out of the Arkansas route. You know, he's loaded for bear. And perhaps a Dare Manor, if they ran the Kentucky Oaks tomorrow, would be the favorite there. I mean, Echo Zulu is still, you know, she hasn't raced yet this year. She had her first workout just the other day. She's obviously very tough. But, you know, the Baffert freight train, express train, just keeps marching on, but of course, very different this year. Joe White of Barrio, yeah, you know, 97 buyer, good race. I think the story there is Safi Joseph. You know, this guy for the last 3 or 4 years has been killing the world, but it's mainly been claiming horses. And we're seeing him make that transition, kind of like what Brad Cox did 5-6 years ago, from just a guy who wins an ungodly amount of claiming races to owners with good horses giving him a chance, and he gets the job done with White of Barrio. The one you didn't mention was Early Voting in the Withers, trained by Chad Brown. Visually very impressive, probably didn't beat much. And when the buyer number came out, only a 78, that's going to have people jumping off the bandwagon, if indeed they had jumped on the bandwagon after the Withers.
You guys hit on all the major ones, you know, and it's funny because when you look at these horses coming in and you look at their names, I try to associate it with, like, Modonical's easy. It's an Uncle Mo. Okay, that's an easy one for me to remember. My Prankster, who won the Swale for Todd Pletcher, you know, is into mischief. So again, I kind of get that. And Messier, I so want Messier to be a Nyquist. Mm-hmm. I so want him to be a Nyquist, but he's an Empire maker. And he is a Canadian bred, so I can see the connection between why they would name it after Messier. But Joe, as a Rangers fan, you know, like, you want that horse to win. You want that horse to be the, you know, to hold up the trophy. But let's I'm going to start with Messier. You know, and again, just visually beautiful, visually, you know, spun away from those horses at the top of the stretch, you know, by 8 lengths, 51, one by 15 lengths in a hand ride. And you guys hit on it. You know, California is its own island. There's a 5-horse field in there for every graded stake race. So you got to take this with a little bit of grain of salt. The second place horse, you know, Messier ran a 103 buyer. The second place horse ran a 79 buyer. So, you know, again, what was he really running against? I think as these races continue to develop and unfold, we'll see that a couple of those horses, if not all of them, aren't even, you know, serious candidates other than Messier. So, you know, he still has some, you know, some races ahead of him to kind of prove himself. I thought also what was interesting about Messier is now he's run 6 times and they've taken the blinkers on and off him 3 different times. His first 2 races, he ran with blinkers. They took it off for the Bob Hope and he won by 3. Then they put it back on for the Los Alamos and he ran 2nd. Then they took it off again, you know, for the Robert Lewis. So I think as an Empire maker, somebody who's owned Empire makers, I can tell you that they are a little goofy and a little bit, you know, late maturing. Some people will say they were the John Greens of horses. I don't know. But, you know, they're certainly faster than me. But yeah, I would, you know, it's interesting that they keep kind of playing around with this horse. Now 6 starts into his career, you would think at this point in time, he'd be seasoned enough where they would know, okay, we're going to have this equipment on. This helps him. This doesn't help him. So I think they're still kind of learning about Messier, which that unto itself is interesting because they haven't, that means that they haven't really tapped bottom yet on him. So he comes out of that race with a 103 buyer, obviously fastest, or should say best buyer of the 3-year-olds so far. And you know, Bill, you mentioned early voting, and at first I was visually impressed with early voting and the way that he ran in an 11-horse field to again run away from it, but went, you know, a 0.5 mile in 48, went 0.75 mile in 6 furlongs and 1:14 and 1, and didn't really finish up that much faster. So to me, there's still a lot to be to learn about early voting. He's 2 for 2. He won a graded stake race. He was a $200,000 gun runner. You know, and gun runners are running all over the place. So maybe there are some, you know, there's some additional talents that'll come out. But, you know, you mentioned on the West Coast, it was the weekend for Bob Baffert. And I would say, you know, on the East or everywhere else, it's been Todd Pletcher's world and we're just living in it. I mean, the guy has like a 25% win percentage overall and like a 40% win percentage at Gulfstream in the championship meet. That is unheard of.
Yeah, I mean, and I think he tends to cool off throughout the meet at Gulfstream, but he's keeping it going pretty well here. Yeah, if you look at him and you look at Baffert, they're both at like 40% in the at the current meet. Early voting, I agree with Bill that I thought visually it was very good. I thought he looked really impressive. He didn't finish up all that great, but you got to remember that this was only his 2nd career start. He ran once in a 1-turn mile, and then this was stretch out to 2 turns. He really did all the running in that race, and I think I would take the figure with a grain of salt, especially in Aqueduct, because it can be such a dead track in the winter. I think that there is a lot more talent to him than you would just think by looking at the buyer figure. I want to correct something I said before. Messier ran the Bob Hope. I got my Del Mar races confused. It was the Bob Hope that he won that I thought kind of just fell in his lap, but he's obviously really turned a corner as a 3-year-old. Just one random thing I thought was interesting. I was looking at the future wager, the Kentucky Derby future wager. The pool 3 of that opens up this weekend. How many not this times are there on this list? You've got Chasing Time, Howling Time. There's a couple others, Epicenter. I think there's 1 or 2 other, not this time, Simplification. Not this time has turned into a very, very good sire early on for TaylorMade there. And you know, not a horse that I thought had a lot of buzz going into his stallion career, but first 2 crops, man, you can't really, first 3 crops now, you can't really complain about what he's done. trying to look if there's any kind of value in the future pool, but I think that that's hard to find. But yeah, overall, three-year-olds are really starting to come on now, and there's a lot to be excited about across the board. Bill, I wanted to ask you something. Corniche hasn't had any workouts yet, right?
No, he has not. And I've reached out to Bob Baffert just the other day to try to get some information. He did not get back to me. Jay Pridman of the Racing Form did report that the ownership group, the stable manager, I forget the person's name, has said that, you know, kind of gave him, well, the Derby's not the be-all, end-all. We'll see what happens. As soon as you read something like that, you got to say, uh-oh. So if he doesn't have a workout soon within the next couple of weeks, I think you can pretty much put a big line through him. But I have not gotten any up-to-date information on that.
Hold out hope. Hold out hope, Bill. I'll get back to you. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Keeneland Sales will be represented by 11 finalists at this year's Eclipse Awards, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. Corniche, Echo Zulu, who we both expect to win. Juju's Map, Life is Good. Malathot, who we also expect to win. Nick's Go, She Dares the Devil. Aloha West, Jackie's Warrior, Gamine, and Warlike Goddess. So I think you have like four or five champions in there, who at least who are going to be Keeneland grads. It's interesting to note the variety in sales prices with these finalists. You have Warlike Goddess, who was a $1,200 weanling, and the Malathot, who was a seven-figure yearling. Really shows how deep and diverse Keeneland sales graduates are. As a reminder, tickets for the Keeneland Spring Meet go on sale February 15th. That's next Tuesday. You can purchase tickets online at tickets.keeneland.com. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
We are so thrilled that Keeneland has been a part of the story for so many Eclipse Award finalists.
These finalists come from all levels, from a $1,200 weanling purchase like Warlike Goddess, up to a seven-figure yearling purchase of Malathot. Just represents how deep and how diverse the Keeneland sales graduates are.
We are very fortunate to have horses like Latruska and Essential Quality and Malathot win three of our marquee races.
Congratulations, each of you, on this amazing accomplishment.
Maximum Security proves he's the real deal with a gate-to-wire win in the Florida Derby.
Champion three-year-old.
Maximum Security has won the TVG.com Haskell Invitational.
11 triple-digit buyers.
Maximum Security, he smoked them in the cigar mile.
Grade 1 winning four-year-old.
Maximum Security takes them all the way in the TVG Pacific Classic.
Secure your mare's future. Maximum Security.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Coolmore. Huge, huge weekend for Ashford Sires, as we mentioned in the open. Adair Manor, daughter of Uncle Mo, won the Las Verjenas by 13 lengths, 94 buyer speed figure. So far the highest by a three-year-old filly in 2022. And Baronath, who I also mentioned, defended her title in the Grade 2 Santa Monica for American Pharoah, 108 buyer. Practical Jokes, Girl with a Dream, got her third straight win in the Grade 3 Forward Gal Stakes. Looking forward to seeing what Practical Joke does with his first crop of three-year-olds. Morello remained undefeated in the Jimmy Wingfield Stakes at Aqueduct, one of three winners this year for Classic Empire. Of course, we can't not mention Cupid, who also had his third winner for the year over the weekend with Belle Goss, who broke her maiden at Tampa Bay. And I think God of Love is on the comeback trail for Mark Cassie as well, so looking forward to seeing him on the Derby trail. We touched on this last week, and it's become a little bit more of an acute issue this week because the hearing that may or may not have been scheduled to determine the first steps for the Medina Spirit DQ was supposed to take place on Monday, this past Monday, February 7th. There was some debate on Twitter between Todd Schrupp and Jeremy Ballin about whether or not the hearing was actually scheduled. Think from Ballin's reporting, and I think from our sources as well, there was supposed to be a meeting and it was postponed. But I think that's the whole point, is that we have no freaking clue what's going on with this. And it just makes absolutely no sense. And you can't get an answer at anybody. They, you know, people have emailed the KHRC and gotten this, you know, rote response that, you know, we're barred by regulation from announcing hearings. But you know, it's only the biggest race in American sports. Who knows when we're actually going to get it adjudicated? It seems like there's no particular rush. We're now 9 months on from the Derby last year. You would think in a competent modern sport, we could have gotten this figured out in max a month or two. But here we are without even a hearing 9 months later. I mean, what can you even say, Bill?
It's a clown show. That's what you can say. I mean, I'd like to see that when they actually do have a hearing and they won't tell anybody about it, the car pull up in front of Churchill Downs and like 23 people come out of it in their clown outfits. Joe, I mean, this is what is so frustrating. It's a bigger issue than the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, that this is why people consider horse racing a minor league sport. This is an absolute joke. Just like you said, first of all, why has it been 9 months? I mean, if it was the fourth race on a Thursday, it would have been done in 3-4 weeks, and it should have been handled like the fourth race on a Thursday. But now they won't tell you anything. We don't know what's going on. Imagine Major League Baseball. I'll give you I love to go back to baseball, but imagine 35 years ago or 30 years ago, Pete Rose got nailed for gambling. And somebody asked Major League Baseball, is Pete Rose going to have a hearing? Can't really tell you that. Well, I heard the hearing was going to be on February 7th. Is that true? Maybe, maybe not. No comment. And then February 7th comes around and they say, did Pete Rose have a hearing? Well, you know, we'll get back to you. I mean, could you imagine the uproar if something in a major sport was handled that way? And the only thing I can think of is the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission is so scared of lawsuits that they are paralyzed. And it doesn't matter. You're going to get sued no matter what. Rule them off from here to the end of time or give them a $50 fine. You're going to get sued. Put on your big boy pants. Run this thing like it's a real sport and not a joke. And A, get this done. And B, you know, stop this idiotic thing where you're not going to tell anybody even the most basic information about is what's going on behind the scenes. And again, gee, it is only the most important and most famous horse race in all of America, if not the world. But, you know, I think that's the only way to put it. It's a clown show.
And Bill, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we're comparing our industry to the major sports in the world. And that's, I think, the problem. The problem is that we expect our industry to come together and have a centralized leadership and centralized rules and everyone, you know, even if you don't want to hold hands and sing Kumbaya, at least everyone is under the same set of rules and umbrella. And you know, the three of us have been railing against that, you know, for almost the entirety of this podcast. And unfortunately, it's just not going to happen because we're not a real sport. We're basically, you know, I've gone from trying to make it to be, you know, where we're compared to Major League Baseball and the NBA and NFL and maybe even Major League Soccer. I mean, just, you know, just something here in the States that where we can say, we're, you know, hey, we're a real sport too. And unfortunately, I've come to the conclusion that we're more in line with bullfighting and dog racing and corgi racing, quite frankly, because we just don't have the ability to self-regulate, self-modulate and ultimately, you know, come to a conclusion that's best for the industry. Yes, in a perfect world, we would love to have transparency and have, you know, the group come together and say, this is it. This is the ruling. Just and Bill, to your point, whether it's a, you know, race on a Thursday, you know, the fourth race on a Thursday at some secondary racetrack all the way to the Kentucky Derby, you know, that we should have kind of one system and one set of rules. It's the Kentucky Derby, for God's sake. Will you just tell us what's going on? Because you're right, Bill. It's going to get held up in court anyway. And I know they want to dot their I's and cross their T's because they know they're going to court. But it's a joke. Again, in a series of bad jokes, this is the latest one that's out there. The only thing that I can say is congratulations to the owners of Authentic, because you're going to be the longest tenured Kentucky Derby winner in the history of our sport.
For sure. And just think about it. Like, we got the Eclipse Awards tomorrow night, and Medina Spirit is going to be a finalist for champion 3-year-old. And we're going to have no idea whether or not he is the rightful Kentucky Derby winner.
Now, Joe, I actually sent an email to the Eclipse department asking if there was going to be an awards, and they said no comment. So we may not know. We may not really have an awards, because I'm sure that the attorneys are going to be circling the parking lot going, oh boy, we got another one here. I mean, it's like the ambulance chaser's delight.
All I can think of is MICKEYWSE. That's the song that comes to mind when any of this kind of stuff happens in racing. I just wonder, like, aren't y'all embarrassed? Like, if you're on the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, if you're a Kentucky regulator, aren't you crazy embarrassed that this has dragged on for so long and you're leaving the public so in the dark about your most important race? And I also wonder, like, where's the pressure from within the industry? From within the industry. I'm not talking about the people on Twitter. Are we yelling about it? I'm not talking about journalists like we have at TDN or Jeremy Balin. Like, I feel like we're doing our job trying to put the pressure on them. Where is the internal pressure from the industry to get this right and to have some actual transparency? And, you know, this is off the heels. Bill mentioned it yesterday when we were talking about this. This is on the heels of a couple of years ago when they had the DQ of Maximum Security and there was no transparency at all. They didn't answer any questions. They released a 60-second statement and then ran and hid. I mean, this is the kind of thing that, again, if this were a real sport, would necessitate a cleaning out of this regulatory body and bringing in all new people to try to not be such a clown show. But in racing, it's like, and I get that it's a government thing. It's a government agency. It's not necessarily people in racing, but it's racing related people in the most racing obsessed state in the country. You would think that we could do better than this. And just to say, you know, we can't, you know, regulations say we can't update you on this. I think it's just, you can't admit that if there's a hearing or not, we're not even asking you to tell us what happened at the hearing. Like that would maybe be a bridge too far for you guys, but like, you can't even acknowledge whether or not there's a hearing on a decision about the Kentucky Derby 9 months after the race was run. Like, it's inexplicable and it's just total nonsense. What else can you say?
Did they even admit that February 7th was a real date?
They said, I asked them that question, John. They said no comment. No comment.
There's no comment, right? Yeah, exactly. We cannot confirm or deny that February 7th does exist.
And was a Monday? No comment.
You know, comparatively to that, the NHC had the quickest ruling of all time in racing by suspending Jonathan Kitchen for 2 years. Now, if you're unaware of this controversy, they had the NHC, the National Horse Players Championship, a week or two ago. I think it was not this past weekend, but the weekend before. Jonathan Kitchen, I'm sure if you're a racing fan, at least in America, you know who he is. He's on TV a whole bunch. He's on Fox Sports. He's a pretty sharp handicapper. You know, he's gotten a lot of attention for, in addition to being a sharp handicapper, he's like a big personality, wears his colorful shirts and blah, blah, blah. I never met him. I don't know him personally. Seemed like an okay guy. I think people got mad at him for this one thing. And I get it. He was supposed to be playing in the NHC, which is in Vegas. And the rule is you have to be in Vegas. You have to be on site at Treasure Island or whatever the casino is where they're hosting it. Instead, he was at Gulfstream and he didn't tell anybody. He was at Gulfstream. He was basically, you know, photographed at Gulfstream and was having like a runner make his bets for him. So that's like a big no-no because, you know, theoretically you could have an advantage because you're up there, you're up close to the horses, like you're hearing the chatter at the racetrack. I think it is more of an advantage to be there than it is to watch it on a big screen even. So that was a big stink about that last week. And then yesterday, the NTRA, maybe it was 2 days ago, the NTRA came down hard and suspended him for 2 years from the NHC Tour. Now, he was an NHC Tour winner, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. So that's kind of a big deal. It's not as big a deal for him because he's on TV. You know, if this was his only way of making money and eating, it would be a bigger deal. But it's kind of an auxiliary thing for him, I think, at this point. And if you go on Twitter, it's again, like the variation of responses is like, you know, I think this is so overboard. You know, you don't need to suspend him. Yeah, DQ him from the event, but the suspension is crazy. And then the other people are like, well, Jonathan Kitchen got away with this because he's friends with all the people at the NCRA and the NHC. So I don't really have a strong feeling about it, but people are talking about it. And I just think it was a little bit of a shady thing for him to do, honestly. And it seemed like he was kind of reveling in it at first and then realized how mad people were and started to apologize and back off. At first, he was like, yeah, totally worth it, like taking pictures and everything. And then later on, once he realized everyone was pissed off at him, he released this like very buttoned up statement apologizing. He's like, yeah, I knew the rules and I broke them anyway. But I wonder if you guys had any thoughts about this whole hubbub.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hubbub. It shouldn't be a hubbub. I mean, this doesn't change my opinion about him one bit. He's great on TV. He's a good handicapper. He did something stupid and he's being penalized for it. And, you know, I the only thing I can think of, how did he think he's going to get away with this? If he were some anonymous guy in the contest, you know, Joe Smith from Poughkeepsie or something like that, he might have got away with it. But the guy's one of the most visible people in the whole contest. And I'm sure everybody's aware, where's Jonathan Kitchen? And then, of course, he's, you know, photographed at Gulfstream. But, you know, this is hardly involved. all the things we talk about on this show and all the you know, killing the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission and this and that. You know, this is just totally really a very, very minor thing. Whether he should have been suspended or not, I don't know. He'll be fine. He'll move on and we'll all get over this.
I thought that was the funniest thing, is that he's a flamboyant, outgoing personality, and his signature piece, I think they even sell like his design shirts online that are bright and loud. And it's like, it's almost like looking at the Where's Waldo page and being like, everyone else is wearing red and white shirts and he's like in a big yellow shirt. You know, it's like, oh, there's Waldo. It's like, how did you think you were going to get away with this? And that's the thing that I was laughing so much about. And again, like Joe, I don't know Jonathan, you know, at all. I appreciate his talent, and I certainly watch when he's on, you know, when he's on TV, because I think he's got a very good insight. And he doesn't take himself too seriously, which is actually a really nice thing about, you know, the talking heads that are in a lot of the sporting events. But what we should really be talking about also is that this guy, David Harrison, actually won the event. And won almost $750,000. He won $725,000, and that's really where we should be, you know, focusing our attention. You know, this is kind of a sidebar with Jonathan Kitchen and whether or not he should be, you know, banned for life or flogged or 2 years or 2 weeks. You know, who cares? But this guy David Harrison, who actually close to Poughkeepsie, Bill, he's actually from Webster, New York, which is northeast of Buffalo, and he won, you know, $725,000. I mean, that's awesome. That's what we really should be talking about, is that the event, you know, the guy did a really kick-ass job and won, and not the sideshow that is, you know, this kind of.
Well, that's the whole thing, and that's why it kind of took the attention away from David Harrison and from the rest of the NHT. And it was, he said it in the story. He said it's a life-changing score for him, and that's one of the cool things about these handicapping contests is, you know, a guy like Jonathan Kitchen, he has made it now separately from being an NHT tour player. He's made it on TV and in racing as an analyst. But the tour and the NHT are really for guys like David Harrison, who, you know, are, you know, everyday horse players who probably have like a blue collar job or maybe like are upper middle class at best. And you win a thing like this and you can maybe like retire a little earlier than you expected to or thought you would. I think that's very cool. And I, you know, maybe we'll have him on the show. Maybe we can talk to him more about it, because I think that there are a lot of stories to be told from that tour about people who live and breathe racing and handicapping tournaments. That, yeah, it was a little bit of a distraction, the whole Jonathan Kitchen thing from the NHC, which was a good story.
Joe, do you ever do any of these?
No, tournaments? I mean, I played I play some of the feeder tournaments on Horse Tourneys once in a while, but it's just, you really got to dedicate yourself to it to try to qualify. Or maybe I'm not a good enough handicapper to do it, because some people could do it like on their first try. But no, I once in a while I will, and I like them because it's a good way, you know, to, you can put in like $30, $40 and have like a whole day's worth of action for it. You know, whereas if you play the horses normally, like I do, probably a couple hundred dollars in, especially on like a Saturday. But yeah, this was totally, this is, I think, a little bit of the way of the future. And I think it's, if you're going to have like crossover from like poker and things like that, it's going to come through handicapping tournaments. And I honestly think it's a thing that racing should do a better job of marketing. There was that show a long time ago, Horse Players, which I thought was pretty good, kind of launched Matt Bernier's career. But yeah, this is the kind of thing that I think racing should be marketing more. A regular guy like David Harrison qualifying for this tournament and making a life-changing score. That doesn't get people into the game, then nothing will.
And by the way, David Harrison, just as a shameless plug, if you need to shelter that money, call the Green Crew. Go to Green Crew.
Yeah, come on, be the guest. We'll kill two birds with one stone there. The TDN Riders Room is brought to you by the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. You can learn about all the benefits that come with breeding in Pennsylvania at pabred.com. Pennsylvania bred just one time. Recently got our first graded stakes win in grade 2 inside information stakes at Gulfstream. 4-year-old filly is now 5-for-6 lifetime. Was bred by Warriors Reward LLC. The PHBA released their by the numbers for 2021. I want to see if Bill and John can guess who was the leading Pennsylvania bred in 2021 by earnings.
Smarty Jones, I don't know.
I'll give you a hint. I've talked about this horse on the show.
Oh, hey, Chubwagon?
Yeah.
There you go. Good job.
Chubwagon won 6 stakes races in 2021, earned over $480,000. And congratulations to all the other leaders in Pennsylvania racing in 2021. counting down the days till I get to see my girl Chubb Wagon again. We'll be right back after this message from the PHBA.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we are thrilled to bring back on the show now three-time guest on the Writers' Room Hall of Fame trainer, Todd Pletcher. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Always good to have you. Always good to talk to you. Obviously, the big horse's life is good. We'll start with him. You made a little bit of waves, I thought, with a comment that you weren't sure that you had trained a better horse than him. You're not usually a guy prone to hyperbole. A, what makes you say that about him? And B, if there was a comparison to another horse in your career, who would it be?
Well, yeah, I mean, what I said, and because I certainly didn't want to offend any previous horses, their owners that I, you know, have trained, but I said I can't say that I've had one that's better. I do think, you know, over the years we've had horses like Lawyer Ron when he won the Whitney and Shaded 147. I think he was the first horse ever to do that at Saratoga. And Quality Road when he won the Don, I thought was, you know, a performance that ranked up there really high. And so, you know, been fortunate enough to train some horses over the years that on their day ran races that were historically great. And I think, you know, Life is Good is capable of doing that as well.
Todd, thanks for joining us. And I picked against the horse. I picked Nick Sko. I'm not the least bit surprised that Life is Good won, but never in a million years did I think he was going to clear off by three lengths like that. Literally, I thought the race, and probably you did too, and everybody else, was over once he opened up. And was that the plan all along, or was that Ired, or is the horse just that quick and that gifted? Take me through the strategy and how you wound up getting that was a huge advantage.
Well, you know, the one thing when you're coming up with a strategy for a race is you know what you want to do. You don't always know what your opponent wants to do. So, you know, I thought when Nick Sko drew the rail that you know, their hands were cuffed, that they were going to have to come out running. And we wanted to come out running and play to our horse's strength, which is his speed. It surprised me a little bit that he cleared off as easily as he did. But, you know, if you look back to, like, the Alan Jerkins, I mean, Life is Good is super fast. I mean, he was a couple of lengths in front of Jackie's Warrior down the backside at Saratoga. So he didn't break great. His second, third, and fourth steps were really good. And you know, he got there the right way. I mean, I was pretty confident turning up the backside, but he still had some running to do. And, you know, we're just delighted with his performance. It was everything we'd hoped for.
And Todd, one of the things that we talk about a lot on the show is when you have an extraordinary horse like a Life is Good, you know, all of us gravitate to a horse like that. It's must-see TV, and we want to see the horse run as often as possible. So give us an idea of what you think the rest of his, you know, campaign is going to look like for 22. And also, I'm going to ask, you know, can he run more? I know you've laid out four or five races for him, but, you know, is there a further career past 2022 in your mind?
Well, I don't know for sure on the beyond 2022. I mean, could he come back in the Pegasus next year? That would perhaps be a possibility. We really haven't discussed things that far. I mean, I don't anticipate he would run beyond his four-year-old year. Again, haven't discussed that with anyone, but that would just be my feeling. I spoke to Elliot Walton this morning, and, you know, we're locking in on the Dubai World Cup. Horse will probably have his first breeze back on Friday. He's come out of the Pegasus in great condition. He's doing really well. So right now the plan is if everything goes accordingly and he trains the way he usually does, we're planning to go to Dubai. Then after that, you know, we're just going to have to see how he comes back from Dubai, how he bounces back. And, you know, potentially the Met Mile would be in play. But again, that's going to depend on how quickly recuperates from going to Dubai.
I want to turn the discussion a little bit to the Triple Crown and the Derby Trail. Triple Crown nominations were released yesterday. You led all trainers with 42 nominations. Obviously, you have some big names in the barn like Mo Donegal and Emmanuel. But I'm wondering if there are a couple horses, maybe one or two horses that you have that are a little under the radar right now that you have particular high hopes for that can jump up in one of these next preps.
Well, Emmanuel is definitely, you know, one that, that we're pretty high on, and he's no longer under the radar, even though he's only had a maiden and a, you know, an allowance win at Tampa. But right now we have him pointed for the Fountain of Youth, and Major General, who's coming back from a layoff since the Iroquois, most likely going a week later in the Tampa Derby. So Mo Donegal came out of the Holy Bull really in good shape. And so I spoke to Jerry Crawford yesterday, and we're sort of weighing our options and going to wait and see how he trains and decide if we're going to have a prep race in between now and the Wood Memorial, which would be the 100-point race that we've got him targeted for since he won the Remsen there at Aqueduct. We know he likes the track. And I actually thought he ran a sneaky good race the other day. He's making up some ground late. It just, everything kind of unfolded the wrong way for him, and took him a while to get out of the clear and able to make his run. So that was the kind of effort we were hoping for, even though it wasn't the result we were wanting.
Todd, let's stay in the three-year-old subject. And Emmanuel's a very interesting horse, but you've taken so far sort of an unconventional route with him. Two starts at Tampa. He's performed tremendously. Obviously, everybody thinks that he belongs with the big boys. But take us through the strategy there. Rather than, you know, doing something more conventional like, win a maiden in Gulfstream into an allowance or into the Holy Bull or something like that, you know, why Tampa?
Well, he actually did break his maiden in Gulfstream.
Okay, right, of course, yeah.
We had him slated to go to Tampa in an allowance race earlier. Unfortunately, the day after they drew the entries, he spiked the temperature, so we missed that. You know, it's just trying to get back on track. And, you know, they had the one other day going a one-turn mile at Gulfstream that we ended up running American Icon, finished second. Him and Iron Works was third. So part of the strategy was trying to split up some of these horses, and also part of the strategy was trying to get him around two turns. So we were able to accomplish that with Tampa. And over the years, we've had pretty good luck going to Tampa. You know, both Super Saver and Always Dreaming ran races at Tampa before they won their derbies. And we've had, you know, a number of horses that have gone through there that have gone on to do well. So I think it's a good place to leg a horse up. I think it's a safe track. And to get some two-turn experiences is key.
And Todd, as the guy who finished second to your horse, I really wish you didn't run him at Tampa.
Yeah, your horse ran well. I mean, he loomed up right next to him, and I was like, I don't know if Pablo's playing, you know, cat and mouse or what he's going to do here. But when he asked him to go, he kind of, you know, he quickened, which was good to see.
Yeah, and part of this question is self-serving. So when you have all these great Derby contenders and you're trying to figure out, you know, which prep to go into, what's your mindset? Because it looks like most of them are training with you in Florida. And you have Tampa, you mentioned, and Gulfstream with you know, some of those preps as well. But how do you parcel it out and figure out, you know, which horse goes to which prep race?
Well, a lot depends on timing. And the great thing about this time of year is there's a prep every weekend. So last weekend, you have the Holy Bull. Next weekend, you have the Sam Davis. The following weekend, the Risen Star, where we're going to send Pioneer Medina there because he won an allowance race 3 weeks ago. And so really it kind of comes down to a couple of things. One is timing, and two, do you feel like your horse is going to be suited to that particular track and surface? And so we kind of work off that. As I, you know, was saying with Mo Donegal, we think he likes Aqueduct. So the Wood Memorial kind of becomes a logical final prep for him. And Emmanuel, we know he liked Gulfstream in his debut, and, you know, we feel like if we're able to continue moving forward, the Florida Derby could be a potential, you know, final prep for him. So it's really just about trying to fit, you know, the right horse to the right track and with the right timing.
And Todd, one other quick question. So you have 42 horses that were nominated for the Derby, and you mentioned some of the top ones. Wit was a horse that last year everyone was very excited about. Winning his first two so impressively, running second in the Hopeful and third in the Champagne. And it looks like he just came back on the work tab. Is he still in contention for one of the Triple Crown races, or is it just too early to tell?
I would say it's too early to tell. I mean, I think we're certainly behind schedule for the Derby. And, you know, when we do these nominations for the Triple Crown, you know, you're doing it for all three races. And, you know, the Belmont's not until the first Saturday in June. So it's a long way away. And we like to keep all of our options open. And so some of these horses, you know, might not be Derby or Preakness horses, but we feel like we could sneak up on the Belmont if they were able to, you know, win a maiden or an A at the Dan and go to the Peter Pan route, that sort of thing. So, you know, the 42 number is probably a little bit misleading when you think of it in terms of Derby prospects.
I wanted to ask, you're one of the only trainers I could think of that wins a $1 million race, and then we don't get to it until like the seventh or eighth question in an interview. But it's also about Colonel Liam, because he did win the Pegasus World Cup Turf, back-to-back wins in that race. Now he's really turned into a nice older turf male. What's next for him throughout the rest of this year?
Well, I think if everything stays on course and we go to Dubai, then we're gonna take him as well for the Dubai turf. Same timing, you know, his life is good. Feel like the timing's good. We kind of be giving up, you know, like the Churchill race that he dead-heated in last year, but just feel like with a horse that's really in good form, I feel like he came out of the Pegasus turf even better than he went into it, that, you know, taking a shot at a race like that is worthwhile.
Todd, if you were a baseball player this year, you'd be hitting about 425. You're 31 for 88 at Gulfstream, 35%. Over just the last two weekends at Gulfstream, we mentioned some of this, you won the Swale, the Kitten's Joy, the William L. McKnight, Pegasus Turf, the Pegasus World Cup. Two parts. I mean, you've been, you know, produced at a high number throughout your career. But can you ever recall a period, like a 2-3 month period like this, where you've been this hot? And why is everything firing on all cylinders right now? What's going right?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, it's good horses. And, you know, when you have horses like Life is Good and Colonel Liam coming back, and, you know, that's the real key. But, you know, we had a really strong group of late 2-year-olds turning three and kind of got us kickstarted, you know, early in the meet in December. And so that's sort of been something that we've seen more of, that we get some of these babies in a little bit later. They come into Palm Beach Downs in September and start to get ready in December. And so we had a number that, you know, like Emmanuel, that came out and won first time out. So it's really just sort of about quality horses coming in and getting ready at the same time.
And Todd, you've mentioned in the past that it's not just the quality horses, but the quality of people you have working for you. And, you know, we're all Jersey guys, so we get excited when we get to talk to Ed Rosen about the pedigrees of the horses you're buying, and Anthony Schmetta, you know, who's a Jersey guy who's been with you for years and years. Tell the audience a little bit about what each of those two guys do for your program.
Well, Eddie works with Mike Rupoli. You know, he's kind of his main bloodstock advisor and pedigree guy, and so he does a great job for us when we're at the sales, you know, of looking up all these pedigrees, and you know, that's part of what we do. You know, we look at the physical, we look at the pedigree, and of course, you know, Rapoli and Vinnie Viola partnered on a lot of horses with St. Elias, and you know, I mean, the strategy is pretty straightforward. Their goal is to hopefully buy horses with stallion pedigrees that can win grade ones and hopefully be classic type horses and go on a stud. So those guys do a great job with that. And then Anthony Schmetta, he's been one of my main guys for over 20 years, and just a super horseman, tremendous, you know, reliable person, and does a great job with the horses and you know, managing everything.
Last question for me. Obviously, you're based in Florida right now, but for the rest of the year, you're a New York guy. Belmont, Naira has made some news recently about trying to winterize Belmont, make it more of a year-round track, and maybe get rid of Aqueduct in the future. I don't think it'll affect you as much because you have more dirt horses, but there are certain guys with turf and synthetic horses that maybe could stick around in New York. Do you think that that'll help keep some horses up north in New York as opposed to shipping down to Gulfstream going forward?
To be honest with you, I don't know what the synthetic would do there. And one of the things that we're sort of learning during this meet is which horses handle the tapeta and which ones don't. And I haven't been able to do it without actually running them on it. And, you know, we've had several horses that have won tapeta races that were off the turf, and they were coming off turf wins, and they handled it fine. We had a couple other ones that were coming off good turf races that we ran on the Tapita, and you could tell in the first 100 yards that they hated it. So, and that was sort of one of the things that was difficult for us before. Like, I can think of an example at Keeneland. Years ago, we had a filly named Wait a While, who was, you know, top-class turf mare. She worked at Keeneland on the synthetic. I remember going like some ridiculous 46 flat, just, you know, with her neck bowed in hand the whole way. And we were running in the first lady. It rained. It came off the turf. And I was like, you know, off that breeze, I have no reservation running her at all. And that afternoon, she never tightened the bridle. She hated it. So it's a little bit tricky to get a line on without, you know, running on it. And so, you know, I think, could it keep some turf horses in New York? Possibly. Yeah, I think it could. And, you know, then it would just be a matter of seeing them if they actually took to it.
Todd, we always appreciate the time. Great to talk to you. Best of luck with Life is Good and all the Triple Crown nominees the rest of the year.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Todd Pletcher will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select The Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made The Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by XBTV. XBTV workout of the week, which we're showing right now, is Ain't Easy. You worked 4 furlongs at Santa Anita on Sunday, going 48-2. Three-year-old filly. Now three-year-old filly looked really promising last year as a juvenile. She broke her maiden on debut for Phil D'Amato. And then won the Chandelier Stakes really impressively. She was going to be one of the favorites for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, but had to scratch, unfortunately. So it's exciting to see her back in training. You can watch her recent works and more at xbtv.com. This was a little bit of a harness racing news story last week, and it stemmed from the doping trial. Adrian Hall was a harness trainer who is a harness trainer and owner, who was one of two trainers to testify against Seth Fishman, who was convicted last week and faces up to 15 to 20 years in jail for his doping programs. The other guy we talked about last week was some kind of no-name guy in Ohio. But Adrian Hall, I don't know how big of a name she was in harness racing, but she was a big enough name that the USTA, the U.S. Trotting Association, issued a ban on her before the Meadowlands last week. And Jeff Gural said that they would not scratch her horses over the weekend. Bill actually talked to her for a story that's going to come out either later today or tomorrow. And I'm curious what she told him.
Yeah, well, first of all, John, as the news developed, first of all, she, just to clarify or to fill in the blanks, she is as small time as they come. She has two horses. She's won a dozen, 20 races in her entire career. So the first part of the story was that Jeff Gural, of all people, who has been, you know, the new sheriff coming into town, cleaning up the game, throwing people out left and right, he, of all people, said she can participate at the Meadowlands. And his reason being was he didn't want to discourage whistleblowers. I see where Jeff is coming from, but I don't agree with him. I think that this admitting that you doped a horse to win a race is so egregious. Something has to happen to you. Maybe not a lifetime ban, but maybe a 2-year ban or something like that. The USTA thing is not that big a deal. You don't need a USTA license to race anywhere. A couple things I learned from talking to her. First of all, I thought probably the new, talk about incompetent racing commissions. New Jersey makes Kentucky look like the smartest, best people that ever lived. I thought they probably didn't even know this had happened. I doubt they even realized that this had happened. But she said that they did call her in. And they're investigating, and they're going to do something to her. So it's an interesting story. I did talk to her, and a couple takes from it. you know, she admitted she did wrong. But, you know, one of the reasons, not that it's okay or excuses everything, but a quote that I use high up in the story, she said, this is harness racing now. She wasn't talking about thoroughbred racing. She said, it's chemical warfare out there. How could I compete with guys whose horses just don't get tired? Wow. And that really hit the nail on the head. She also said Fishman was selling a lot of legitimate things like vitamins and electrolytes and whatnot, but said that he had a client list that included some huge names in standard bred racing. She wouldn't name any names, but there's a lot there. And, you know, I think for now, the story is what Corral did. Does she or does she not deserve a second chance? And she did say that, you know, because of what she's gone through, which is the USTA getting roasted and social media, she said a lot of people are mad at her for being a rat. And I think it would be the exact opposite. The one thing nobody should be accusing her of is being a rat. You know, maybe she did it to save her own hide, but nonetheless, she said if she had to do it all over again, she'd have to think twice about this. And she does say that what has happened to me will and should discourage all future whistleblowers.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with Jeff Corral in general that this is, you know, this is kind of what you want to see now as these trials go forward. And I agree that, you know, there probably should be some sanction or some punishment, but I don't think a lifetime ban makes sense for someone who was doing what a lot of people were probably doing in the industry, but actually had the courage to come forward and admit it and try to implicate someone who was the enabler and the facilitator for that kind of behavior. And I think that's a better argument. The chemical warfare thing is a better argument than when people get up there and they're like, "Well, really, I was trying to save these horses. And, you know, this was something that was in my veterinary code to give these horses like PEDs." Like, such a ridiculous argument that Seth Fishman tried to make. I think it makes more sense to say, what was I supposed to do? I was going to get chased out of the game if I didn't try to compete with these guys whose horses, as Bill said, don't get tired. I mean, I think that's a big reason that a lot of people in thoroughbred racing do it. I don't think necessarily everyone that's ever juiced a horse is the worst person on the planet. I think sometimes there is mostly an economic interest in there and not being, you know, forced out of a game that you love. And we talked, you know, honestly, it reminds me of Travis Tiger. We talked to Travis Tiger about doping and cycling. And he was saying that a lot of people had to do it, they thought, to compete with the Lance Armstrongs of the world. And that's an indictment of the system that allowed a guy like that to get to the top. And I think that that's kind of where racing is right now, that there are a lot of guys at the top that a lot of people have a lot of, I think, rightful suspicions about. And so if you're a small-time trainer or a mid-level trainer, you have to think to yourself, like, I'm not going to be able to survive if I can't compete with these guys. And I think that, you know, that argument at least makes a lot more sense than the I was just doing it for the horse's benefit one.
Joe, one more thing that I wanted to bring up. So the question is, did she testify only to save her own butt? That she, the federal government said, look, we're either going to charge you along with Navarro Service and Fishman, you might be going to jail, or cooperate with us. Or did she do it, you know, with pure intentions to bring down this guy? In the stories that came out,
can it be both?
Let me finish up and maybe you can decide. Yeah, I guess it can be. In the report coming out of it, it said that she did have an immunity deal with the process. She said, told me that's absolutely not true, that they promised her absolutely nothing. And, you know, I don't think they're ever going to go. I'm sure they're not going to go after her, try to prosecute her. But she said that you know, I stuck my neck out because I wanted to help the government convict like a guy doing really bad things. So, you know, again, that's just her story. And she, that's one of the reasons why she talked to me. She wanted to get that out there.
Right. Yeah.
And Joe, you mentioned Travis Tiger, which just reminded me of something. I don't know if you guys saw, and we talk about different sports. I don't know if you saw about baseball. One of the things that sunset was 20 years ago, Major League Baseball said, okay, we're going to test for steroids. And they actually quoted Travis Tiger in articles where basically he was like, if this isn't back on the table, then what's to say that this isn't going to happen again in baseball? Which I thought was very interesting, just that they reached out to Travis Tiger. My selfish thought immediately went to, well, it looks like USADA is not going to be involved in Major League Baseball, you know, drug testing anymore. So they have a lot of excess capacity now. Let's get back in there, Heisa. We have an opportunity to get them back to the table.
Yeah, baseball is a lost cause. Come on back, guys.
Come on back.
I thought that should have been a bigger story that baseball was going to stop testing for steroids. I don't know why that wasn't like leading all the talking head programs.
Right. Well, it's because everyone's talking about whether or not there was a hearing on Monday. Exactly. You know, in our sport.
And the Eclipse Awards, which seamless transition is tomorrow night. It's a great day for racing. Obviously, there's a lot of clouds hanging over, you know, some of the Baffert stuff. And, you know, so it's just there's a lot of messiness in racing. But I think the Eclipse Awards are a night to celebrate all the great horses and the great performances. Jim Gluckson and everybody at the Eclipse Awards does a great job. And I'm not just saying that because they gave me one, although that helps. It's a great night, and it's a night to, I think, just put all this messiness to the side and just celebrate the horses and at least some of the connections. But there's a little bit of new blood this year. Joel Rosario is going to win Champion Rider after Irad Ortiz won it 3 years in a row. And I think before that it was Jose, before that it was Javier for 4 straight years. So Rosario obviously deserves it. He had a monster year. And I wouldn't be surprised if he won another Eclipse Award or two in the future. He's just such a great big race rider. You know, he just seems to step it up in these big grade ones. So that's a little bit interesting. Brad Cox is going to win his second straight Eclipse Award. So I think you've seen like a little bit of the passing of the baton. You know, obviously Todd Butcher and Chad Brown are still big kahunas in racing. But in terms of, you know, day-to-day winning races, I think that Brad Cox has taken over them a little bit. I don't know if there's any, Bill, you think there are any like really debates about who's going to win some of these categories?
I wouldn't say debates. I think there's a couple divisions that are not no-brainers. You know, the no-brainer like an Echo Zulu should get 100% of the votes in the juvenile fillies. I just scribbled a couple down. Turf, Filly and Mayor Turf, the sprint and the Filly and Mayor sprint headed by Gamine, who it's a disgrace they haven't put her in, made a special rule and put her in the Hall of Fame already, you know, ahead of schedule. But, you know, there's no nail biters here. The one thing I'll say is somehow I got hoodwinked into covering the ceremony tomorrow night. It starts at 8:00. People, please keep your acceptance speeches short. I'm begging you.
Bill, I'll be right there with you. I'm closing the paper that night, so I'll be right
there. What was I thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah, I should have said, like, you know, I had to wash my hair on tomorrow night.
The most important story about the Eclipse is that it's being broadcast live on TDN.
John, always the company man. I forgot to mention that. Thank you, John. Yeah, you can watch it on the TDN website. And Bill and I will be burning the midnight oil as these speeches go on and on and on. Well, that's what was nice about having it be virtual last year is they limited you. Like, you could not cannot record a speech longer than however, like, I think the schlubs like me got 30 seconds and the bigger people got like a couple of minutes at least. But Jesus. Bill and I.
Is that why Bill and I weren't in your thank you speech?
You can only thank so many people, John.
I like how you got to your girlfriend, your family, your dog, and then that was it. And then, you know, and you did mention Patty.
You guys are the wind beneath my wings, blowing through everything I accomplish in this world. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. You can learn more at westpointtb.com. West Point had two winners over the weekend with Chestertown, who's a very likable gray that runs in New York throughout the winter, won by over 4 lengths at Aqueduct. And in SWOT analysis, John has an interest in that horse who won it Sunday on Fairgrounds, Louisiana Bred. Congratulations, John, and the partners. And West Point's O Bezos, who ran the Kentucky Derby last year and won his first start of 2022, is aiming for the Grade 3 Mineshaft Stakes next week at Fairgrounds. So we're looking forward to seeing him develop as a 4-year-old. We'll be right back after this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills, fraction of the bills, experience the power of the partnership, change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse every step of the way. When it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving up down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. Legacy has 17 winning sales grads already in 2022. That doesn't seem possible. That's a great number for a year that's only a month old. 17 winning sales grads. Their most recent winner was Music Festival, who broke her maiden at Golden Gate. She was purchased in utero for $120,000 in 2019. Just wanted to mention this before we sign off. This was something that got a lot of horse players mad. You know, in general, horse players are a very ornery group, but I think most of the time they have a legitimate beef. And this was definitely a legitimate beef on Sunday at Tampa Bay Downs. You had a major pick five carryover. I think it was a little over $90,000, which was a 15% takeout. Like, you can't really, in a 50 cent minimum, can't really beat that in terms of value in racing. So they had no rain. The turf course was firm for the first part of the card, I believe. And then about 10, 15 minutes before the fifth race, which was the start of the pick five, was set to go off, they took the remaining races off the turf. So there were three turf races in the sequence. They took them all off the grass, which is something that you would think they could have made that decision earlier in the card. But nevertheless, if you're going to make that decision before the fifth race, you have to extend the post time. You have to extend the post time at least another 10, 15, 20 minutes. People put hours into handicapping these sequences, and you're going to completely change it 10, 15 minutes before the first race goes off. I think that's totally unacceptable. I think you have to have more respect for people's time and people's work in handicapping these races. And then to put the cherry on top, there were horses that were scratching in the later races as the horses were loading into the gate for the first race of the sequence, which is just, for the life of me, I cannot understand why Trax cannot get these things right. Like, this should be the easy stuff. We talk all day in racing about all the systemic problems we have and all the really perplexing and vexing issues that we need to get past in racing. This should be the easy stuff. Just show respect for the people who are funding the game. And especially in a circumstance like this, where you're already screwing them and making their previous handicapping completely null and void, to then be scratching horses as they go in the gate, depressing people's payouts. This should be easy, guys. You got to have more respect for the horse players in this. It just makes no sense to me how Trax struggle we go back to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf thing, like, you know, at least that was a little bit more complicated than this. This was an easy one, guys. Just extend the post times, have all the scratches in, and then give people at least 20, 30 minutes to redo their players. I think that they turned a lot of people off. And I like Tampa. I think Tampa does a good job. They have low takeout. They have a nice turf course, except when they take races off the turf when there's no rain. And I think overall they do a good job. They have a good simulcast feed. And, you know, they're good on social media, press releases, all that kind of stuff. But none of it matters unless you treat the players right. And this was a big slap in the face to horse players. And I think they have a right to be outraged over it. All right. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. A reminder that the Keeneland Spring Meet runs April 8th through the 29th. You can buy tickets starting next Tuesday, February 15th, at tickets.keeneland.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Todd Pletcher, our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you so much for watching. Enjoy the Eclipse Awards and the Super Bowl. We'll see you next week.